messages.
Hi, everybody. It's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. It is a little after 11 p.m. on the West Coast on the 22nd day of June 2022. We are here with Two Feather Sergeant Miller, myself, and the Hijacker. And I think Hijacker had some more to say. Continue, my friend.
Yeah. So we're now, yesterday was the longest day of the year. So now all the days start to shorten up. So we're coming on the backside of summer. But anyways, talking about the gas tax, I went ahead and looked it up. And it has been 18.4 cents. 18 and a half, basically half cents since 1993. And then the state taxes on gasoline, they can be as low as 9 cents, which is in Alaska. Alaska has the lowest gas tax. Or it can be as high as 59 cents a gallon. Guess where? Who do you think would have the highest gasoline tax?
Well, I would almost guess either New York or California, one of the two.
Yeah. California, right. Yep.
Well, I think the most expensive gas station is this gas station right at the off-ramp at a freeway where everybody runs out of gas in L.A. So, like, if you're running low, you have to get off at this exit where there's one gas station, and he's like, you know, hey, you want the gas, you're going to pay $10 a gallon. And then, you know, you buy a little bit just to get you down to the next exit so you can pay $8 a gallon instead.
Right, yeah. Yeah, very enterprising. So where I was going with this, High Council, is that we know we're on a clock now. We got about 100 days before we get the kickoff. And now what we're trying to figure out is how are they going to do it? What is there going to be the progression? You know, are they going to go for the fingernails first? Or, I mean, you know, do they go to, like, you know, you're cutting the tongue out? Or are they going to take an eyeball? Or are they going to, you know, put these electrodes on our testicles? I mean, let's talk about what they're going to do to us. You know, they're going to show us their machines. So,
well, you know, there is a school of thought that I don't know if you listened to the last, take this with a grain of Himalayan pink salt, but Ben Fulford and some others like Max Kaiser have talked about how this collapse from different angles is all being engineered. Now, some people think that there is, of course, you know, faction war still going on, and things like cryptocurrencies and the collapse of the oil and cash equity markets and the companies and all of this stuff is controlled and engineered so that we can indeed move off of the old primitive system that we've been on for, you know, so long that we would all probably agree that there are hidden or due to national security, there are patents that have not been released. You know, Nikola Tesla with his free energy that could be transmitted through the air without wires. We all know about that, that, you know, Westinghouse and Edison were competing. And then at one point, you know, when J.P. Morgan found out you couldn't meter Nikola Tesla's free energy, well, that was not going to fly. And so a lot of this stuff was confiscated by the powers that be, quote unquote. Coincidentally, Donald Trump's uncle was one of the people that got a hold of a lot of Tesla's work. But that being said, Tesla notwithstanding, there's a whole other assortment of technologies that are available. And like I was saying earlier, is I don't know how fast it would be to get the infrastructure for this new technology, so a shift to actually occur. But maybe in some ways this is going to be a good thing, because there's got to be a time, and we all thought maybe it'd be gradual, right? But maybe it's better to have a clean break from the corrupt systems, from the food cabals, from the oil cabals, from all these, the banks, everything that's running everything right now, turning the world into crap. Well, yeah, maybe we do need to sever it. And so if we do that, and we, the people, are allowed to our own devices, and we can maybe get access to some of this information, you know, through a few little miracles and, you know, the grace of God and divine providence, I should say, then maybe we have a chance as a species. I mean, I'm just putting it forth that way to look at it in a positive manner, that it is possible that we could come out on the other end of this stuff pretty clean. What do you think?
Well, the only way that's going to happen, Mr. Rowan, you touched on it, is divine intervention. So we in ourselves are not going to be able to do it. We know the construct of the world now. We know about the Jews. We know about the Illuminati, the Jesuits, all the secret societies, who killed JFK. I mean, we know it all now. We know how they work, you know, drinking babies' blood, adrenochrome, you know, young blood, transfusions, how to stay young, looking young. We know about the serpent seed line, reptilian-human hybrid, the lizard people among us, the shape-shifting lizard people. Which, by the way, that was a good catch, Mr. Rowe, on that one fella that thinks that he's actually starting to shape-shift.
Well, did you see his bones are growing? And he's growing like physical. He moved his leg and these bumps came up.
Right. Yeah, the muscles. And then he went to the optometrist.
Optometrist, yes.
Right. And checked his eyes.
They're turning into slits.
Yep.
He's like, what's going on? Yeah, that's creepy. DNA.
Right. Yeah, he took all the jabs. Yeah, we kind of know what it's doing now. And so now that we know the construct of the world, we know that basically what Fulford, and I catch you on your Monday and Tuesday show, Ro, you must listen to, right before a Deacon show. And usually the Fulford letters, I think it's on a Tuesday.
You wait.
Right. But if the world was constructed like what he's talking about, then all the stuff that we're talking about, or that we know, it's just not possible. The best thing that we got, and the closest that Fulford is to the true reality of this world, is the competing gangs or cabals of elites. You got your Russian group, you got your Chinese, you got the Black Dragon, Japanese, you know, you got the Muzzies, you know, you got these different groups, a lot of them connect over. You know, got the Five Eyes.
Right. You have the Dragon Societies, the Muslim Brotherhood.
And, right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, all the way down to where you got the Moose Lodge, the Elk Lodge,
the Odd Fellows Temple.
Yeah. What's the other lodge?
Well, there's the Odd Fellows.
Right, yeah, but I'm talking about it's Catholic. It's the
Knights of Malta.
Knights of Columbus. Yeah. Then you got your faction. You talk about Sergeant Miller, the Black Bootlegs.
Knights of Peter Cahill.
Right.
That's a big one too.
Yeah, and the Masons. We know all that. So we know the world's not, it's not what Farfour is saying. It cannot be. There's just doesn't appear to be any white hats. We've checked the military. Military went AWOL during this election. We all thought the military is not going to let this happen.
Have you heard of this thing called Dark MAGA? Dark MAGA, like it's like I saw this thing about this guy was talking and he's like, look, you know, we know that, you know, Donald Trump let us down and we know what you the blah, blah, blah. And you know, he was also spoofed or whatever and blah, 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 blah. And then it says we try to do things, you know, nicely the first time and look at what. So now there's this new movement that's kind of underground right now, I guess. And it's called Dark MAGA. And it does seem pretty dark. I mean, it's just. More like it's pretty much alt-right, extreme, you know, like hardcore, just in your face. Here we come with the, you know, both barrels kind of thing. But that's kind of, I think, where it's sort of the equilibrium to the extreme left. And it's I mean, you it's like Nazi Germany kind of stuff, you know what I mean?
sounds like quicksand.
Man, I don't know. I'm just saying people are getting very angry and extreme and to their wits end on both sides, you know, and I think that's kind of what the plan is. The cabals, the factions are trying to get the people riled up. Part of the collapse of the system, of the old system, is absolute chaos and revolution. There is a group that utilizes the people in order to sway change. And they're fighting with an authoritarian group and these are at odds. And so that's why we see like folks like Joe Biden in the United States is to rile the people up and to get us to provoke a revolution. So this is all planned. It's all pretty crazy. But I wouldn't say there's a good side and a bad side. There's not a good guys and a bad guys. They're all, it's like warring mafia families. I mean, it's just, you know, groups that utilize different methods for their control.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my take on it, too. Their actual organizing principle, in other words, all these different groups, is actually at the head of it is Satan. And it's a satanic, you know, the Bible calls Satan the god with small g, the god of this world, acknowledging, yeah, that this is, for some reason, the Most High shifted the war from heaven down to earth and says, okay, you're going to finish your war down here. Here are the rules to the game. You know, I have at it. And, you know, then we're born in here. Basically, we're the souls that are born in here, and we're born into a war, basically for our souls. And then you got the duality that Zen Garcia talks about at sacredwordpublishing.com, where you know you got the good and the evil. And Zen actually believes that just as everybody's given a good angel, or a good influencer. Or protector, that also there are interdimensional,
yes,
demonic spirits.
Yeah, in fact, that's interesting because there are parallels in several different theologies. There's like everybody's given a personal jinn, in according to the Islamic faith. And everybody has that guardian angel, you know, everybody has that demon on their shoulder. But never try to tame your demons. Always keep them on a leash, though.
Yeah.
The yin and the yang.
Yeah, and you can tell that this is true because we've all had thoughts that they're so either violent or lewd or evil that they just don't come from us. We don't think like that. So you'll get this like a crazy thought, you know, imagination in your head. And I don't want to say anything because I don't want to put the image out there. But anyways, so they're just like way far away from what would come into our head. And yet you would get a thought like that. Anyways, yeah. So some people like Zen would say, yeah, that's coming from the evil djinn, that you get these persuading things. So what was my point? I'm trying to get back to this war. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just derailed me, Mr. Rowe, with the Fulford construct.
Okay.
So, right. So now we have to come down to how this is all going to play out. But the one thing that we do know, in 100 days, all of our lives are going to be different. And there might be something to be said that the elite, the reason why they put these movies out, The Purge, the zombies, all the rest, is maybe because I knew they have a morbid sense of entertainment. I actually think they use me for entertainment. It's a reptilian thing. You gotta be in the big club to understand this line of thinking. But maybe, just like you got all these different private groups that are funded in the Ukraine, you got like the International Legion of the Defenders of the Ukraine, where a lot of mercenaries get paid from. You got the Azov. You got the Wagner Group on the other side. So maybe these elites, and I'm starting to think this could be, they got their set of rules. We all know that. They don't, you know, they don't have the same law that we got. They can commit murder and get away with it. So maybe like one billionaire on the Ukraine side, he's got his mercenaries, and he says to a billionaire on the other side, like the Wagner billionaire, all righty, I throw my 50 men in here, use shotguns, automatics, machine guns, 50 cal, sniper rifles, RPGs, no missiles, no mortars. Let's see who controls the village at the end of the day. And so the Wagner Group says, I'll take that bet. I'll put my boys in. Or like your boy, like you're always glorifying the Chechen guy, the guy with the beard.
Ramzan Kadyrov.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be like the Chechen billionaire says, well, no, I want a piece of this.
Akhmat Sila.
Yeah, and so they could have like real-time betting. All right, we'll do this 24 hours, winner take all, 100 million. Who ends up with the courthouse in the city at the end of the day, at the end of 12 hours? And then you can see him because it's all video and everything's on video, where these billionaires are entertaining themselves while these men creatures kill each other to see who's like the best, who put together the best team. So you just don't know. But my point is, we don't know the reason why all these guns and everything is maybe they want us to have a purge. Because when it breaks down, it's going to go tribal. It's going to go racial. It's going to go back to primordial instincts. It's not going to be able to be helped you know. You can't stop it. Just like I've said this before, my Uncle Tommy, he owned this bar. It was right across, I think, from the zoo. I think it was Connecticut Avenue, Constitution. I can't remember what, but I'm sure it's something like Connecticut. It was one of those avenues anyways. It was during the Martin Luther King riots. And this was in a fairly nice neighborhood. Anyways, they just blew Martin Luther King's out. And so everybody just went crazy. Anyways, there was a big riot in D.C. And my uncle owned a restaurant, a gin mill or whatever, a bar. This was more like a bar. And so he could look down the sloping hill because D.C. is not like it slopes. It's not flat, but it's not like hills and stuff. I think the biggest place in the capital is like a sloped hill called the Hill. So anyways, he was telling me, he goes, oh, yeah, this is what happened during the riots. And I was out. Now, he withdrew back into his restaurant, but he had firearms. So he was kind of passed by. Anyways, I said, well, what did you do when you saw the rioters coming up the hill? And he said, well, GD, Timmy, you see 600 black dudes coming at you. It don't take long to pick a side. What do you think I did? So Sergeant Miller, these people, they could actually pit people like me and you against one another, even against our will, because we got no choice. You got to pick a side. So you can see where they can create havoc.
That's like prison mentality when you go into the prison, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like that. So maybe that's what one of their plan is, to have us with all these guns, just we all kill each other. The liberals are even armed up now. The women got guns now. They know about it. So,
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Are they able, quote unquote, able to rile up the public, or is humanity, has humanity learned enough? Is humanity mature enough? Is humanity spiritually aged enough, mature enough to override that and come together? You know, and just basically say, okay, look, we're all in this big crisis. We know what's up. It's artificial. It's bullshit. They want us to kill each other. We're not going to fall for that game. You know, we're going to cooperate. And yeah, there's going to be a few people out there, some bad eggs, a few people that don't want to go along with the program. They're going to try to mess things up. But the majority of people hopefully can overcome that.
No, Mr. Rogia, the numbers are not on your side.
Asking the question. I mean, okay, right. Let me hear your opinion.
Okay, look at the numbers. 2/3 have been vaccinated. They're already under mind control. A third takes some type of psychotropic type drugs.
Yeah, serotonin reuptake inhibitors
right.
Yeah. Benzodiazepines. Those are the worst ones.
Right. I've got one son who's bipolar, and I mean, he's like, he's got it bad. He's been bit really, really bad. All my other children okay, but the one son, he's just, you know, he got bit really bad. There's just no fixing that. I don't know if the drugs have made it worse or whatever. But
they usually do. The drugs.
Yeah,
usually.
That's what I'm suspecting, because he does seem to be getting worse and worse. I never wanted him on any of the drugs right from the beginning when he had the nervous breakdown.
What they've done is the pharmaceutical companies have made people think things in an 180 degree inverted way. Like, for example, a person that has had, let's say, quote unquote, a history of mental whatever, depression or something, they snap off. And then somebody says, well, he's off his meds. Like, oh, you know, he's always needed these meds to be normal. No, actually what happened was he's been given those meds and he's now off them because they make him not normal. I've heard this countless times from many people that, you know, they screw with their heads and they don't like this. And it's the medication, of course, that screws them up. And when they stop taking them immediately, the imbalance, the chemical imbalance in the brain is so off that they do horrible things like that. And then they blame it on the person not taking his meds. No, it's actually the person doesn't want to take that toxic substance that's done that much damage to them already. But, you know, it's a desperate attempt to try to stop it.
I'll be honest with you. Whenever my son gets off his meds, it's really serious.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, one time he attacked me. He's like 150 pounds overweight or whatever, which is also one of the problems with the they seem to work at the base of a human being. It's like it makes them not want to work, eat, just stay in their own mind, all the basis things that of human being. Anyways, he ended up getting mad, and he choked me out. All I remember, in fact, the only reason he didn't strangle me to death, but anyway, he grabbed me and choking me to death. And I remember just as I choked out, I remember he says, "I'll kill you, Satan," right? And he's strangling me. Anyways, what happened is when I choked out, we ended up falling forward so that his head hit the table, which caused me not to totally black out. And then he got up and ran off or whatever. And he had to keep him from whatever. But whenever he's got off his meds, you're right. They get off their medicine, they can go crazy. They can be really, really crazy. I remember he got off his meds, and it's not because he listens to me, because I don't even talk about certain things with him or whatever. Anyways, it was during the Israeli war. Oh, that's right. It was the Israeli war, because he watches TV all the time, like CNN. And the Israelis were at war with the Palestinians or whatever. Anyways, he was off his meds, and he usually goes down and gets on the walking machine at the YMCA. You know, he got one of these membership type things. So he walked. Anyways, he got off his meds. And he ends up saying to the manager of all people, "You know where there's any Jews at? I want to kill some Jews." So the manager, he calls me, and he goes, "Well, I don't know what to do." And I said, "Well, does he seem angry?" He says, "No, he left." And I says, "Well, you know, I don't know what to tell you." And I'm thinking that he's like homicidal, like when he tried to choke me out, "I'll kill you, Satan," right? So I'm thinking, what do I need to do? So I says, "Yeah." So I said to the manager, I says, "Well, don't worry about, you won't have any liability if something happens, because he said it to you." And the manager goes, "What?" I says, "You're the manager, right?" And he says, "Yeah." And I says, he's gone. "Right." And I says, "You haven't called anybody?" And he says, "No, I called you, Mr. H, whatever." I says, "Well, okay, well, don't worry. You won't have any liability." Anyways, I knew what it would do. This next phone call was to the police to pick him up. And so he wouldn't end up getting, you know, going crazy on somebody. And they took him to the hospital.
Red flag laws, 101.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, the addiction to those also is, it's worse than, you know, like the narcotics. It's actually more, the addiction can go on for years on those things. And, I mean, it can be any of those benzodiazepines. I mean, you're talking about Valium, gabapentin.
All that.
Yeah. All these.
They're neuroleptics. They are I know what they are because they've been used on me for very short duration.
Yeah, but very short time. It's not too bad. Nobody really should be on those things for more than, let's say, a month at any stretch.
Oh, I wouldn't even say that.
That's pushing it. Yeah.
Right. No, I got, in my case, that was forced drug injections. There was no voluntarily taking that stuff. I never took it. They'd send in four guys or five guys and say, we can do it the easy way or the hard way, but you are going to take these shots. So completely illegal, not allowed to do that. But in South Carolina, they don't care. They just do whatever they want.
Well, they had this thing, I think it was in, I want to say it was either in Oregon or Washington, but maybe I'm wrong here, where I forget what they called it, some sort of cocktail, like the county cocktail or something. And the sheriff would have somebody that's a little bit of a rowdy. They'd call the paramedics, and they would stick them with a little bit of, it was their own little concoction. It had like ketamine in it and something else or whatever, and It would work, but they got sued because, they weren't supposed to be doing that, you know, just pumping people full of ketamine. And I think a couple people, had some problems with it. But
oh, that probably had morphine in it. Just relax, chill out, you know. Ain't no big deal that you're stuck in a little 6x10 jail cell. Calm down. Just, right. So my point is that we know in this next 100 days that we got this, whatever's getting ready to happen, a purge, world war, power off. I mean, they just got a whole banquet of stuff that we're getting ready to be hit with, including the death wave. And now that the numbers are coming out, so some people are speculating as many as 10 million Americans have died so far. And they're basing it off of these actuarials. So in 2020, guess what the payout was for the insurance companies, the death benefit payout? It was 600, it was 500, almost $600 billion payouts of all the dead. Today, guess what the payout is?
Well, a couple triple. Trillion?
Almost 2 trillion. Mm. 1.6 some trillion, almost 7. So almost triple.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people are calculating already, well, if you had this many that died and they got the payouts, and that most people do not have insurance. Anybody that's got a semi-normal life has got some kind of life insurance. If you got a fairly decent job, you will have life insurance. But so you think about, okay, well, that's like, okay, they injected over $1 trillion, actually liquid cash. Like the old saying goes, somebody wanted me to sell, insurance one time. I was either going to go insurance salesman or real estate salesman and become a broker, work up to a broker. And I went nuts. I went. Guns going off and became like a war junkie, Sergeant Miller. Anyways. The point is that old saying in the insurance business, when you walk out, in other words, when you die, then don't worry about wifey and the children because the money walks in. And that's one of these little things we were going to use. You use them as sales techniques to close somebody when you're trying to sell them an insurance policy. You know, right when he gets close, he says, if you do this, this solves the problem. When you walk out, you don't got to worry about your wife and children because the money walks in over
a billion. No, I'm not going to worry because I'll be dead.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. But the whole point.
I get you.
Right. Is the whole point is that wifey and the children are taken care of.
Right. Sure.
And,
sure.
And so all of a sudden, all you got to do is just sign this piece of paper, give us this check, and that whole worry is all over for you. Just put that little problem out of your head. So, anyways, the point is that usually when people die, money comes in. Money flows for whatever reason, mainly the insurance or whatever. So we've had this injected. So if we really did have this many people dying, and if we are going to see a death wave, that means we're going to see a lot more cars come up for sale, a lot more houses, insurance policies being released, payouts. So we could see in a morbid type way, as a chunk of the population dies off, a flooding of money into the system. You see what I'm talking about, Mr. Rowe? It's something that people haven't thought of.
Well, there, I was thinking about that. You know, I sort of morbidly making a joke several months back about, you know, the vaccine thing. And I'm like, well, you know, the price of houses theoretically should drop because there's going to be a lot of empty houses. There's going to be a lot of owners that, you know, because there's going to be less people. So,
Is there really? I mean, when we take a look at the rate of immigration, we're looking.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's another thing, though. You've got, you know, thousands of people flooding in. And then, of course, there's the ones that are going to be shape-shifting. And, you know, you made me think about something, Jacker. You're like, you know, the elite are really kind of like crazy in an eclectic sort of way. And they're very bizarre. And some of these Luciferians might find it funny and fun to, you know, watch society just go into total chaos and try to turn some of the human beings into these other worldly creatures, you know, to just run around while they sit and watch, you know, their chaos take place across the surface of the earth. You know, because I there's this guy, what was his name? He wrote a book, and he's kind of like Jay Parker. He was raised into one of those families, and he talks about how these really high level Luciferian rich guy, you know, that you would just like a, you know, typical board member, you know, CEO of a company or whatever. He has this big mansion and stuff in Europe, and he's got people that are his servants, but they've been you know, with their minds have been kind of warped with drugs and procedures and things to turn them into his personal worshiping slaves. And that one of the things that their goals is to have like everybody worship them as gods. And you've heard Yuval Harari talk about how we will become as gods and how there's a useless class. Now, when he says we, he's not talking about you and me, we. He's talking about him and his buddy Klaus, we. When he's talking about the useless class, then he's talking about you and me, we. So that's the difference there. And maybe there is some sort of sick, sort of twisted side thing to just as a novelty, you know, just kind of mess around with the creation while they reshape it into whatever it is they're going to do. Because I don't think that their ultimate goal is something that's going to take place in like 5 or 10 years. I think this is multi-generational, decades long. You know, we're at the very beginning for them, they hope, of this transformation into something completely different. And it's going to take a while if they get their way. But this is just the beginning to get their foothold in. So, I mean, that's a possibility. Maybe I'm completely off the mark, and of course, anything is possible. That's kind of a dark. And
no, I mean, no. There's basically the Christians, by and large, with their eschatology of the 7-year tribulation, actually agree with you, Mr. Rowe. It's coming down now to we're thinking that when we had the first great American grand eclipse that went from Salem, Oregon, all the way across, I think it came out Charleston, South Carolina or something, and that the next one, and then the a month later, we saw the 12 stars in the Virgin Virgo with the moon at her feet and the sun, you know, at her head, or and the 12 stars. But anyways, that's actually was the first, like, 7 years, like in Joseph's dream. There'll be 7 years of plenty in which we all had a good ride with Trump as far as the economy, you know, since 2017. And then the next one is going to be, so the first one was August 2017. And then the next one, next great American eclipse, which makes a perfect X across the United States, right in the heartland, is going to be April 8th, 2024. And so some people, a lot of Christians are starting to think that's actually going to be when there's some feast around there, Feast of the Tabernacle or something. That's when the beginning of the tribulation actually starts, the seven-year bad tribulation. So we had the 7 years of basically plenty, and then 7 years of the bad. So, yeah, we have some time. In other words, the end of the world is not coming this fall. I agree. I'm just trying to work out what's the next shoe to drop, because now we're in the final glide path and we can see what they have in their menu, or what's in their, what do you call it? A whole bunch of weapons where you store them, Sergeant Miller.
Arsenal?
Armory?
Right, armory, arsenal, right. We can see what's in their arsenal. And every single one's bad. Yeah. And so what I'm trying to figure out, and the reason why I got on the air tonight, took me a long time to get around to it, is what in the next 100 days, what are they going to do next? And then are they going to do it? Now, Biden's saying the next 90 days, he's going to give the gas tax. And it is 18.4 cents, so he's right about that. So maybe it wasn't code language. But are we going into a holding pattern for the next 90 days in which they got their school shirt? It looks like they got their red flag laws, in which they're going to, once this thing starts, and then they're going to go down their list of all the people who think are going to be a problem, and they're going to do the red flag, just going to make it up, just going to jump these people. A lot of them will be probably people in the alternative truth community. But what's the next thing? I mean, do you all think they're going to go like blackouts during the heat of summer, like July, August, when it's real hot, do like a test purge, see what that's about, have one whole city, you know, black it out like LA for, you know, no electricity for like a week to see what happens. And then there's right. there's other people gaming out, is that what they're going to do is they're going to use the blackouts in the key cities, which are already falling apart. Like New York City has lost 1,600 police in just the last couple of months, all retired, or what a lot of police are doing. They're going to, you know, rural sheriff's departments in the country. So are they going to bring in like UN special police? Robert Revolt, he talks about this, like, you know, the first test city.
They're gonna hire the migrants and say that they're giving people jobs.
Yeah, that's the other thing is that somebody told me. Yeah.
They'll speak
to
like,
to give the migrants the jobs, the police. Go ahead.
They're going to hire the Somalian migrants.
It's not far-fetched to believe what Jacker stated, because Jacker, you're familiar with New Orleans. The other night they just had a blackout in New Orleans. They went from close to Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans all the way to Metairie, Louisiana, which is right above New Orleans, and total blackout. And they did this for like a couple of days, and imagine what happened to the people's food. So could that have been a test run to state that some simple move like that?
Oh, not only that, Two Feathers, Deacon John in Columbus, Ohio, he says they've been doing rolling blackouts. They give no reason for it. And then I heard somebody else from Virginia talked about rolling blackouts for no reason. So maybe that's what they got planned, is cut the power. Everybody's hot, no air conditioning. You're right, food goes bad. So maybe the first thing to soften the population up with, like if you're a military, you want to knock out command and control, you want to knock out the power. Now people can't communicate. They're hot. Everybody's got stinking sweat all over them. Can't sleep. Maybe that's what's getting ready to happen for the summer, is that we're going to have everybody gets their rolling blackouts. So, and I don't know if it's like before World War III or the monkeypox, or before there's no more food left. I mean, you know, or everybody's got to get.
But Jack, you're one that's on a chicken farm. What is your opinion about hearing about the burning of the chicken ranches and also these dead cattle? If you heard something about that, you wasn't on with us when that was brought across, about all those dead cows in Kansas and Texas. So what say you about the chickens and all, dude? I know that's got to really boggle you there. Go ahead.
Well, no, I don't have that many chickens. I got enough chickens to get like a couple dozen eggs a day just for like immediate family. I do know one thing, but the chicken was probably the greatest animal that God created to keep mankind alive, basically, because of the nature of the chicken and the high protein egg it produces and how fast it grows. It is probably would be like the number one animal, which is
along with fish,
which is responsible for man's. Well, the thing is, fish, you gotta go out and you gotta be near water and gotta go to a boat to get it. A chicken literally eat anything. I mean, a chicken, they're incredible machines. It's so durable. I mean, they can even eat their own shit.
They'll eat mice and snakes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, no, whatever. But I don't worry about that. But the point is, you're talking about the blackouts. So maybe that's what we should get ready for next, is the series of rolling blackouts. And maybe they're going to test the populations before they bring us in to, you know, the zombie apocalypse or
clone dinosaur people with like weird vaccine shape shifting properties.
Yeah. There's actually some visions and dreams about that. This one guy talks about he's in the house with his daughters, his teenage daughters, and they hear the trucks coming, and they look down. He's in suburbia. So it's, you know, a home on every quarter acre, right? I don't know what city or whatever. It didn't go into that. But he looked down, and he could see that there were soldiers that were going house to house, getting people onto these trucks. And they were coming up the street. And he remembers, and he lived near a river or a creek or something was behind him. So him and his daughter scrambled out the house. And they had to worry about these soldiers, they said, because they had a high, keen sense of smell like a dog. They could smell you. And so they knew they had to run to the river to get down in the river to cloak their human smell. And he remembers that they made it to the river, but then he tripped on a tree limb or whatever that went down into the creek, and he fell, made a noise, and that he remembers one of the soldiers came running over, and they were hiding under the bank, and they could look up. It was at night, and they could look up through the branches in the creek, and they could see the soldier, and they could see him sniffing, and they took a look at him, and his face was like reptilian, and supposedly they had really good eyesight as well. In other words, they were genetically modified human beings or whatever, hybrid type. And that it was well known that if you shot them, it wouldn't kill them. The way their organs were set up, but not only that, they had body armor. But the only way that you could really kill them is you actually had to shoot them through the face and the eyes. In other words, you had to shoot them in the head, and they had helmets and everything else. But so, yeah, that's one guy's dream. But there's been other ones like that. And then it talks about, like later on in the book of Revelation, during the 7-year tribulation, the locust army. And these are soldiers. They got the face like a man, the teeth like a lion. They've got hair like women. They have the claws, the hands, the claws of like a bear or a leopard. And they got a tail on them, which has some kind of either stinger, either they're able to sting with their tails, or there's something connected to their tails where, I don't know, they got, you know, they load up a battery of 10, like, tranquilized darts, and they take their tail and flip it around and sting you, stick you with, like, a dart.
That's a manticore.
Yeah.
What you're describing is a manticore.
Right.
Which actually have been documented on the planet as real things with bounties out for them from the Indians back in like the 1300s, because they were very aggressive creatures. Like unicorns. Unicorns, which were related to hippopotamuses, existed on the earth. They were real creatures. They're documented in Jesuit documents and books, and they could kill elephants with their horns, which were thought to have magical properties, which is why they were hunted to extinction. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've seen many of those old maps, all kinds of stuff that's not around now, which would have been during the previous, before this last mud flood, which I think happened around 1740. Because then the whole world went to war, and then just had a whole bunch of anomalies after that. You know, somebody in chat was arguing, you know, just because I don't believe your Bible, this and that, you know, don't you know that there was a homosexual in 1611, I think Francis Bacon or somebody that that put together the King James Bible. And my response is, man, I'm so far past, you know, whether the Bible's been changed or not. You know, that's not what this is about. In other words, you know, don't get like hyper-religious. Even Zen goes through, he documents, you know, just the name of Yahweh has been changed.
Well, you know, there's a lot of parallels. Like, let's say, for example, the legend of King Arthur with the story of Jesus Christ, Hare Krishna. So in different, there, everybody has stories about the floods and, you know, the other things that came from afar or somewhere else. There's demons, dragons, and other types of creatures in all mythos and religions. You know, spirits like angels or jinn or, you know, devils, demons, blah, blah, blah. So, I think that there's this, you know, just interpretation, depending, like, let's say if it's an Abrahamic religion versus, you know, Tibetan Buddhism or Hindu or something like that, even though there are different, religions, but their interpretations of many of the same events, probably of the same things that happened in ages past, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then now that we know that most writings, you know, like the oldest writings that we got, you know, you got a few papaya manuscripts and stuff like that, but, you know, basically everything comes out of the 15th century. It's not much more writing before that. Not many more books. So
you have the Nag Hammadi. You have the Nag Hammadi had the Dead Sea Scrolls and some of those kinds of things.
Yeah, but I'm saying is by and large, all of our history, you know, they could make up anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did make up a lot of stuff. I believe that. You know, like we see the ancient ruins of Romans and all of that stuff that they had. I think that when the Romans got it, it was ancient. I think that they inherited a lot of that stuff. They didn't build it. They added on to stuff and modified a little bit of it and renovated some things. But I think that the Romans and the Greeks may not have been the actual creators of, you know, the civilization in the way that we think they are. You know, we think that those are the foundations. When you look into the whole Tartarian history and what the earth was like beforehand and how the cities of Rome and Athens were nothing but little tiny villages and outposts on these maps that had, you know, huge, marvelous cities connected by the canal. I'm digressing here, but you know what I mean, we've been lied to.
Oh, we're lied to about everything. Not just like that, what's that CIA director, Kobe or whatever, he'll know that we've done our job when everything, he wasn't talking some things, when everything that the American people believe basically is a lie, is false.
Yeah, then they know they can shape it any way they want, because then they have complete control of the narrative, and then they could sort of mold and spin that narrative down the timeline whichever way they want.
Yeah.
We have no reference point to a truth, then it doesn't matter. And the worst part about the lie is we're not worth the truth to them. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm saying, is that we're coming up to the one thing that is concrete that we do know is about to happen is in these next 100 days, we're about to go through cataclysmic changes. Because just too many of these things are all hitting. I mean, it could be in the next 90 days, that every house is delivered by Amazon, like 3 body bags, where if you know, somebody in your family dies, put them in a body bag, pickups on Monday, Tuesday, or Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, something like that. If you find somebody dead on your property, put them in the bag and put it at the curb. So,
and policing by phone. Remember, like, they're starting to do policing by phone now.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's several places back east that are doing that because of the gas prices. And can you imagine, you call 911 and you're like, I'm being robbed right now. And you're like, okay, tell them to stop it. The police are on the phone and they say to stop it. They're not stopping it. Yeah. But take our guns. You don't need them.
Or imagine calling the police and they're robbing you, and you hand one of the robbers a cell phone. The cop's on the other end. He just wants to talk to you. He says maybe he's got a better offer than what you can get out of my stuff. You know? And then he takes the phone, and the cop says, look, we have a fund. We have an anti-robbery fund, and you can get it anonymously. And again, you can see the robber saying, well, what do you, you know, how do I get this money? He says, well, look around. You see all the shit you're selling, stealing? Is it below 2,000? You think you can get 2,000 for it or more? Because we got a cap. We have a special program. And just give us a number or an account, you know, anonymous burn throwaway account using Bitcoin or whatever. It'll be sent to you. And you don't need to rob these people at all. You just robbery walk away. Yeah, just say, it was, you know, it was Sergeant Miller 13.
We'll need to have the shop owner that you're robbing verify that they did get robbed by you. So that's the only thing that we need.
Right, that's right.
Once the shop owner verifies that you did rob them, we'll go ahead and reimburse you. I can see. Yeah. You know, society is getting so whacked out. I could actually see something like that. They have had programs where they're, I think it was Stockton and Oakland or around, or no, it was Richmond, where here in California, where they were paying a few people to not get in trouble. That they found a few troublemakers, and they're trying this new experimental program where they give them a life map and say, okay, we're going to give you $500 a month if you don't kill anybody. And you don't otherwise get in any major criminal activity. So it's a real thing.
But one thing we do know with this next 100 days is they're going to have their police force intact. And there's a lot of the good police are leaving. They can see the handwriting on the wall. And so they're going to have to replenish. And they're going to have their enforcement class. So it does look like they're going to pick people that normally wouldn't. Like before, if you were a cop, you couldn't have any tattoos.
Yeah, now you're going to have blue hair and nose rings. Yeah. And
right, even in the military, you can have tats on your neck, even on your shaved head.
And there's really nothing wrong with that, but like the whole culture with a lot of it that goes with a lot of it is, you know, because I know a lot of good people that have tattoos and interesting piercings and stuff, but.
Oh, actually, almost everybody except from.
You cut out there, Jacker. You said almost everybody except for.
Except for people in my age bracket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a younger thing. Yeah.
It was just when the tattoos were coming on. And so there's a lot of older people that are albinos. And I don't mean white. I mean, not they don't have any markings. But
when I was, you know, younger, it's like a tattoo meant something. Like people got them there was a meaning. A lot of the people are just doing it because their peers do it or something. And it just, you know, it's, I don't know, but it's just a different, it's more socially acceptable now, I guess. Maybe I'm a little old fashioned or something.
I just noticed because, you know, I go through a lot of vids. That anybody under really 35, they all got sleeves
or
sleeve and a half. Yeah, they all very few people don't have tattoos now. In fact, I remember
even the women.
Yeah, especially the girls.
I remember in the last 10 years, when I was still operating in public, you know, setting off my political atomics when I got locked up here in Washington State. I remember the last few times. So your tattoos, where are they at? We're going to have a picture of them. And I remember telling the jailers, I don't have any tattoos. And, no, don't give me this bullshit. You're going to have to take every piece of fucking clothes off. And don't tell me you don't have any tattoos. And I says, no, I don't. All righty. Fucking get the clothes off. Let me see. You know, and I thought, really? Everybody's got tattoos now?
Except me?
Yeah, right. As I'm stripping, right? Really? So, but anyways, stripped, and he basically said, well, GD, okay, all righty. But it was like he expected. So, and he expected everybody to lie to him, too. Now, that's a hard job there, being a jailer.
Wow. Yeah. That's, I would say that being a jailer is not, for me, not quite as hard as being a slaughterhouse worker, but it's up there. Slaughterhouse worker, jailer. I mean, it's up there in the list.
Yeah. It's a tough job. I mean, imagine your job is to go to prison every day.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather be just working slaughterhouse.
No, man, I couldn't kill things. Like, I couldn't kill animals every day. I just couldn't do it. Be around blood and slaughter? No. I mean, at least with the
bullet through that cow, my boot.
Nah, at least at the prison, you know. At the prison, you might have some good days where, hey, the inmates are all right today. But you go to the slaughterhouse, you know you're killing. You're killing every day. I can't handle that.
Well, the thing is, once you become a prison guard, a jailer, the very nature of the job is you got to get corrupted. Even if you have to turn the other way, the fact is that you got to turn the other way. Now, most of the guards, they'll bring stuff in, their body cavities and stuff, and sell it. That's how all the drugs and everything comes in.
Yeah, I knew some people that worked for the system in the Netherlands, the prison system, and the guards. Yeah, they'll bring it in.
Oh yeah, no, they'll bring in cell phones, everything. Well, whole another world out there. But anyway, so we're coming down to this 100 days. And it does look like we're two feathers. If that's happened in Louisiana, now did they give a reason? Was it storms? Because you get some good.
Oh, just from what I gathered,
Now you get some good thunderheads down there. That? I remember you get good storms down there. Thunderstorms.
Well, from what I gathered. They were saying it was they would, you know, then the question was, how could it be just one pole knocked out all those, you know, all that territory, you know?
Yeah, no, that doesn't make any sense. And then you say, how long were you all without power? 3 days?
No, not here, just over in New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, I'm to the point now, and I don't believe anything that basically comes out of the government narrative. For instance, like all these cows, I've heard a lot of ranchers or whatever saying, look, I'm in Arizona, I'm in Texas. You know, it gets to be 110, 20, no problem.
Right.
Cows don't die like this. We make sure they all got water. And on really hot days, some people set up. They got a sprinkler system where the cows.
Yeah, what happened to cooling ponds, Jacker, and trees? Anyone did any research to find out if there was trees around there, cooling ponds, anything like that?
Yeah, and if nothing else, they'll set up especially in places like Texas, where you don't got to worry about like North Dakota type cold. Guess what their barn is? It's basically six I beams, you know, 30, 40 foot high, with a metal roof on top and a wraparound fencing. And that's their barn. And the cows come in there at night. And then if you get a rainstorm or whatever, you know, they got a place they can sleep. They open it up in the day, but it also gives shade. So, but there's no way you're going to have 10,000 cows die.
Anybody that's got a farm out there, if you're listening, you know, maybe you can go and check this. Do you have silos, and have they put quote unquote cell phone antennas on them recently, or 5G boosters? Because there's a person back east that's been going around looking at these silos, and he's been going to the farm people that own them and say, hey, do you mind if I go on your property and take a reading with my, you know, EMF meters and things on your silos, because I see that you have antennas. And they allow them to do that, and they're noticing some interesting readings. And apparently a lot of this is recent, you know, that the government or whoever, a contractor, comes to the farmer and says, hey, you know, want to pay you a certain stipend every month if we can stick our, you know, repeater. It's just for, you know, faster internet for the community. You'll be doing your part to help out. We'll give you an extra, you know, $500 a month or whatever. And the farmer's like, oh, sure, no problem. And so is that what it's for? Yeah, maybe it does do that. But what else does it do? You know, I mean, so he's going around these silos. He's down on the ground and he's getting these readings. And he's like, this thing's full of grain. And a normal one without the thing has a reading of, let's say, 0.05, you know, between that and zero. And he's all, here, we got like, you know, 750. It's like, and it's not good. You know, it goes into the grain. And does that get transferred? Is there something that's happening there that then in turn gets transferred into whatever the grain is used for? I don't know.
Yeah, and here's a kicker too. If you look at one of the cows as you're scrolling through and kind of viewing all of, you know, the dead beef, you look at one of the cows, like if you ever seen these animals, like a dead dog or, you know, a dead deer or something, like armadillo on side the road, and all four of their legs are like sticking up in the air, but they got this one cow that's laying there and all four of his legs. Now imagine what, how much you say, Mr. Rowe, like 750 pound cow?
Yeah, I noticed that. It looked like they were almost like electrocuted or something, just like froze in place.
That's my point. If
they were dying of heat exhaustion, these things would be collapsed on the ground, like folded up, like, you know, like if somebody's dying of heat exhaustion, you don't stand there and go with all your limbs sticking out. You kind of like hunch over and you'd be like, you know, you're going to be like putty. And that's what the cow would be like. They'd buckle over and stuff. Their legs wouldn't be sticking up and they wouldn't be on their back like something came and flipped them over. You know what I mean?
Right. And, yeah, and to that point, and to that point with that said, you know, has anyone like any PI or something, any investigators went over there and maybe snuck on a property and maybe looked at the forehead of the animal to see if they might have been zapped or burned, like they would have had burn marks on their hide, you know?
They got planes. They can do one blood pass. Burn? Yeah, one pass over herd of cattle. And turn on microwave weapon and literally wipe out the whole herd, stop all their hearts, you know.
Dang. You see?
Yeah. So no, that was not organic. That was a synthetic kill.
Yeah, and even the people, the farmers around there were saying, no, we know our cows, we know our weather. We've had worse weather than this, we've had worse conditions, and we've never, ever had issues like this.
Oh, no rancher. No rancher in the United States believes this story.
No, absolutely not.
Which is a good thing, because we're starting to notice that as they create these realities and these narratives, each little segment of society is basically saying, Nah, that's a bridge too far. So you had the whole segment of the ranchers take a look at the story and say, no, we don't believe that. You got the millennials. Now they're hearing about monkeypox and they're going, wait a minute, you know, would stick monkeypox in me so I don't get monkeypox? So, I mean, that's going a bridge too far. So they're not believing it. So, you know, hopefully these mothers of these under age five don't take the shot. And hopefully people start rejecting all vaccines. Like,
well, Mr. Rowe, have you gotten a view of the one in Texas? Did anyone go look at the cows that died in Texas?
Well, I saw one picture where they showed a lot of them that were just, like, they looked like they had been, like I say, tasered or something, you know, electrocuted. They were just stiff and laying in different, they all looked like it was just instant shock, like their hearts just stopped. There was bing.
Now, they probably got that, Mr. Rowe, an aircraft that can actually generate enough electricity to where it's like a thunderbolt that goes into the ground, just like a lightning strike. And everything around the lightning strike, you know, for 60 feet or whatever, dies. We've all heard of that. You know, lightning hitting a soccer field and killing a couple of soccer players. You know,
but he said there was 10,000 in Kansas. How many in Texas?
I didn't hear about the Texas. So they're continuing their operation then, huh? When did this happen?
Mr. Rowe, you can zap that up real quick, Mr. Rowe. Like, how many cows died in Texas? Is that a possibility?
I can't really. I'm not sure about the Texas one.
I never heard about the Texas one.
It's just saying high temperatures affecting livestock production in East Texas. I don't see any real issues. They're just saying it's just affecting how they have to care for their cows. The grass is dead. There's not enough hay.
Come on. Yeah, could that be the next, Jacker? Could that be the next attack on the American beef? You heard what Mr. Roach just said, huh? Not enough hay.
That would dovetail into this fall where we have the food shortages. So that's definitely coming. And then you got the tractor trailers or limited amount of the fuel additive they need and the diesel oil. Everybody's buying up that. So we're coming to crunch time. It's all going to hit. Looks like right around beginning of September or October.
I did notice, like, we had some moments here in Louisiana to where we were producing, you know, plentiful amounts of hay in our area. And we would, Sergeant Miller might have saw this as well going his way. What they were doing is putting these big brown bales of hay. Now, recently, I haven't seen anything to Mr. Rose Point, you know, in Texas. They were shipping like vast amounts of round bales, those big round bales of hay, you know, coming north, I think, at one point in time. And I would see on a multiple occasions where these farmers were, working as neighbors, in other words, per se. And they would buy the northern farmers was probably having some sort of implications with you know, maybe the cold snap at that time. They wasn't producing enough hay, so they would, you know, ring into the southern hay farmers down south here, and they were shipping the hay up north, you know, working as like a neighbor thing, right? So they would give them a good price on, you know, I suppose, like that. So you might, you know, find I'm coming to see that those type of, like, to Mr. Rowe's point, you might see that hay being shipped, you know, westerly, you know, per se, that, you know, because they if this is the case, You know, I'm pretty sure here in Louisiana, I wouldn't think that they would let our Texas friends cattle, you know, go down in peril, you know, without, you know, trying to work with them on some type of feasible price that they could, you know, ship them some of those bales of hay, you know. If that makes sense.
That's a separate economy, especially down here in Louisiana. That's a whole separate creation that a lot of farmers made. Those hay storehouses. I know three of them that's like in Church Point. Oh man, it looked like the size of a Walmart, and it's full of the little small bales of hay, the little miniature, and the big round bales you talk about.
Mm.
But you see nothing but Texas license plates. You know, with the flat beds, with the dualies. Oh yeah, they want that good fresh hay. Corn.
Yeah, because you can get that hay, it's like it's green. You know, it's like got that green in it. Boy, that's that good hay that. And it hadn't really turned brown. So hopefully, you know, that I think, you know, when we think about that Build Back Better tactic that Biden uses, right? What would be, per se, you know, in you all's mind sight, you know, that they're just using this in a way we could say, like, in a psychological term, you know, would we be using our minds, you know, because if I had to give an example. You look on television, you see a lot of these millennials or these business commercials, the guy with the mechanic shop working with the Cox, the lady from Cox. He's putting cameras for insurance purposes inside of the, you know, the mechanic bays and stuff, you know, for insurance purposes. So like on entrepreneurial type of operations, they want to see if we have the mindset to build back better educationally, you see what I'm saying? And they're just using this as like a psychological testing to see if we're strong enough, because even I'll give you another example. The little dude that the young guy, the millennial, is cutting hair in a barbershop, and the boss man that he is over him, he winds up firing him because he don't like the way the guy's cutting hair. You know how freaking old-time cranky bosses are. So he uses his money, sells his car, and goes and starts his own little barbershop. You see what I'm saying? Another example, they got a guy, look like he might have, a little Mexican artist that looked like he might have been in prison at some time. And, he, you know, that's what he used to do on locked up on the inside. And the commercial is a Modelo. Beers, you know, the Modelo commercial, if you ever watch those, it's like saying that the fighting spirit, in other words. You see, like, in other words, they want, and you see a lot of the people that's into exercising now, taking the different diets and the different Golo vitamins and, you know, chewy gummies and stuff like that, you know, so because they want somebody with these fighting spirits and the entrepreneurial mindset, you know, to think that we can't do something psychologically as individuals. And this is the new Build Back Better scenario. Does that make sense to you all? I mean, think about it. If you think about it in that sense. But yeah, there, in the meantime, it's... Would you know, they use that fear porn scare tactic type of psychological warfare on us, right? As Sergeant Miller and I was reading the other night, and that's what the government is using. They're using that psychological warfare on a lot of us and making everything, you know, a weapon. Like, everything's a weapon, psychological weapon.
Yeah, you know, well, what I'm noticing. The closer we get to this this end game here in the next 100 days, is that what I've seen over the last few months is they're hitting us with one thing after another, which enrage us, shock us, numb us. You know, the latest is the whole thing with the little kids putting dollar bills in, you know, stripper drag queen type thing.
Yeah, I saw that.
It just seems like they're hitting us with one thing after another to make us punch drunk as we go into these last rotations before they get ready to drop all of these big bombs on us, so that we're not even able to think or even to prepare. And so that's why I think once they start, I think it's going to be one thing after another. Like,
well, Jacker, when is like, according to the scriptures, you know, they said they'll be beating their weapons in the plowshares. I just wonder, you know, I always have wondered, when does that occur? You know, when the war stops, you know, when we come to the mindset of creating a world that we're all looking for, you know, because the weapons are no good if we're killing each other.
Well, right.
You know what I'm saying, Mr. Rupp?
I think that scripture is like after Christ comes and sets up his kingdom. In other words, all of these weapons will have no use. The weapons of war. Right.
Because at some point, this junk has got to stop, man. I mean, you know, I just, you know, if I had to look on the other side, you know, and I think about this, you know, this conflict going on in Ukraine, you know, if, you know, with the, you know, what we had seen so far with the shelling in Kiev is why I asked earlier, that it would be in, I would feel, in Putin's best interest in, you know, to the point y'all were talking about earlier, that Putin is, what has happened is, if we think about, you know, somebody had stated earlier that, you know, he's tired of these Western people, right, with that mindset. And then we think about an article I was reading one early morning, about 2019, Putin had went before the EU, and he was speaking to these people, and it fell on deaf ears. They didn't even hear the man. This was before the war even began, you know? And these people would just act like they weren't even hearing what he had to say.
So, oh, no, what they've done is they've changed all the language and the scenarios.
Uh-huh.
That's what Lavrov said. You know, I can sit here and tell you plain facts on what happened.
Yeah. And
talking past. Oh, I hear. So I saw an article. Kiev, Ukraine, the queer capital of Europe. And they did it because today they were supposed to have some gay pride parade, something. But anyways, turns out that Ukraine was the queer capital of Europe. Who could have thunk it?
Yeah. Wow. Wow. You see, in with that mindset, you know, we think about the people that have left that area, well, surrounding areas, right? And you know that they had fled. And it wouldn't be far-fetched to believe that Putin wouldn't want to take that. I mean, I get y'all point about the grain and all of that, the wheat, you know, being farmland. Kiev will become that. And, it, you know, and it's a good land, you know, possibly for that. And, you know, not needing a nuclear attack per se. But, you know, I'm sure he's in the mindset now with all of the foolishness that these people played, you know, to his seriousness of not wanting Ukraine to join NATO, right? So, he, you know, it wouldn't be far-fetched to believe that he would want to either get some type of leadership in there that would work with him if this Zelensky guy couldn't do such. And what I had saw, ran across something the other day, is so Zelensky was still thinking about joining NATO. You know? So it wouldn't be far-fetched to believe that he's to the point that he, you know, that he just wouldn't want to just go ahead and just take the whole territory. What is the latest of movement within Putin administration? Like, how far westerly have they come? Go ahead.
Well, the biggest thing is this other strategy, which is coming into view, and you probably hear it first here, but this is just what I'm thinking, and I've thought about this for actually shortly after the whole thing started. But I think what the Russians are doing, and Mr. Rowe alluded to this, so once an area is stabilized, once the Russians have firm control, there's no snipers running around or saboteurs, everything's back to normal, then what the Russians are doing, they're actually taking over because Kiev is no longer paying the municipal government, the mayor, the county workers or whatever, when an area falls under the Russian control and they know they're not going to get it back. So that particular county, municipality is lost. What the Russians are doing is they're giving everybody Russian passports. In some cases, driver's license, or in a lot of cases, driver's license, actual driver's license tags for their automobiles. And wow. They're paying the mayors and the old power structure that was in charge of the county or the city or town or whatever. They're actually paying them in rubles directly from the Russian government. They say there's blocks and blocks and blocks of Ukrainians lined up every day to get their Russian passports and to get their paperwork, subsidized cell phones, whatever they need. So this other strategy, what I'm thinking is that as these people are coming through, and there's even Ukrainian soldiers that have defected or have been captured. And then once the Russians realize, oh, this guy just got conscripted, you know, he's not into this. And, you know, he wants to line up to get a Russian passport and a stipend. I'm thinking what the Russians are doing is I think they're building what you would call a white army. Like, when the Bolsheviks took over Russia, you know, they were called the Red Army. Well, the old Tsarist army was called the White Army. In fact, there's whole divisions in which Hitler picked up and incorporated them into his army. There was even one equip them and use them. He thought that the white, you know, Russians would turn on the Germans. So it's a matter of trust. But I'm thinking that what Putin's doing is he's picking up the Ukraine and he's going to these guys and he goes, look, what we're doing, we're putting together a force, an army, many battalions of Ukrainians to where on a certain day when we get close to Kiev, you yourselves go and retake back your own city. And then it'll be you guys that are in control of Kiev. So he could be building a white Ukrainian army. So at the right moment, he'll release a totally Ukrainian but Russian-equipped army to go take the capital city. Maybe with the former president of the Ukraine, who's still alive. He's kind of old, but he's still alive. The one that got ousted in 2014, and so he'll head the Ukrainian army.
You talking about Poroshenko?
No, Poroshenko. He was a chocolate guy that took over afterwards. Oh, after okay. the thing. He was a different guy.
Mr. Rowe might know his name.
But then the other thing I'm thinking is that the Russian intelligence agencies, as these Ukrainians are applying for these passports, they're sending some of them down and, you know, talking to them a little bit, maybe giving them a couple of tests, finding out their story, see if they're good liars, see if they got high IQs or whatever. And then they're offering them, well, we got a job to make 1,000 rubles a month, which is like, wow, the ruble's down to 50 to 1. So that would be 1,000 rubles, 50 to 1, $20, I guess. So it'll have to be, you know, have to be a lot more rubles than that. But telling some of these guys, listen, we're going to send you back. We're going to give you a pocket full of money. You go back. This particular safe house, or this is where you go and you pick up a little radio and equipment. You go back. You be our eyes on the ground. Tell us what's going on in Kiev. Try to work in, if you're able to work into the city government, Kiev city government, that's worth another couple thousand rubles a month. You know, if you get to be a policeman, you get even more. And so basically Putin, the strategy is that Russian intelligence starts sending these guys back in like an army of spies. And so that when the Russian army finally does make their move, which they should have done before, and I think Putin fired the people responsible. But, I mean, crying shame. All Putin had to do was do what he did in the south and do what he did in the east, not touch Kiev, swung his whole army that was supposed to go to Kiev, swung that all the way to Belarus, all the way to the west, where there's no forces in the Ukraine, and then just slam the door, the border door of Poland and Romania with that army and sealed the Ukraine. No panic, no everybody going every which way, no openly attacking the city as far as Kiev. But they did it the way they did it. Anyways, that would have been, and then all they would have to do is just hold their position, not make any movement, and they would just strangle the Ukraine by cutting off, you know, all the rails and the road. No resupply in, weapon systems, mercenary, none of that. None of that would have happened. He would have shut the door on all that, but that's not the way it went. So anyways, I'm thinking he might be preparing a white Ukrainian army and an army of Ukrainian spies to husk it out, so that, because it appears that the Russian army, even though they can move, they're not moving. They're keeping the battle like within a certain area. And they're basically saying, we're going to keep taking ground unless you keep throwing guys in this particular Kharkov city and fight us here. Let's not, you know, the Russians are saying, let's not go to another city and rip that one up. Let's struggle, or make the Ukrainians thinking we'll struggle on this front line, so that they bring the soldiers to us to fight and kill. Which, by the way, that guy, what's his name, Mr. Ro Lagami, he's in there. He's a Chilean who's in the Ukraine with his pretty wife. I can't think of his name, but he's recently done a podcast, and he says that the Ukrainians are losing like 800 to 1,000 guys. In fact, multiple sources are saying that's how many guys are getting killed per day in the Ukraine. On all fronts, you added up about 800 to 1,000. So that's a lot of guys.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
Yeah, so we may be seeing another strategy being employed. He's going to deploy the spies, and he's going to build a separate Ukrainian army to take their own country back, so that, you know, if, when and if they decide to go take Kiev to decapitate the government, it'll be Ukrainians that do it. And the Russians can stand back and say, hey, they're taking their country back. So you don't got to worry about us. You got a friggin' civil war you got to take care of. And,
makes sense.
Yeah. So,
I mean, they, I mean, you know, at some point, you would think some of these, even citizens, you would think that somewhere down the pike, you know, they would run the history, you know, of that territory, because this guy over here in my area, he hasn't done enough digging. He thinks that Putin actually, how did they say it, Jacker? You know, invaded that land. That's what he thinks. You know, this guy over here in my area. Huh?
Yeah, that's because he's watching TV.
Obviously.
He doesn't know that Putin hit the Ukrainians, and particularly that 150,000-man army right on the border of Donbass, along a 200-mile line or something. No. How do you invade historic Russian land and peoples? How do you do that?
Yeah.
They're all married, all brothers and sisters and stuff. It's all one big family. That's why it's so heartbreaking.
And what's the shocker too is he doesn't know that you know, with the mindset of nuclear, not wanting nuclear on his border, you know, he doesn't know that I think it might have been Poroshenko that gave up the nuclear capabilities, you know, to Germany or Poland, I think it was, or something like that. Might have been Germany. I forget which one it was, but it was like a backdoor dealing with money. It had something to do with money, the exchange money.
That was Yonovich or somebody like that. Luger was involved in it. It was the last of the two real senators. It was Richard Luger, I think, out of Indiana, and then his sidekick, Luger, and
I heard Bill Clinton was in office then and had
it was all that. Not Glass. What was his name? Luger. Richard Luger. And, this guy out of, he was out of Georgia. They were like real senators back then. This is early 1990. Sam Nunn. Yeah, Luger and Sam Nunn. They were the guys who brokered the deal to get all the nukes out of Ukraine. Yeah.
Now with that mindset right there, Jacker, with that mindset, y'all heard it first right here on Revolution Radio. With that mindset, that Putin had gotten, you know, because he really had gotten pretty sharpened on, you know, the history of that Ukraine territory, right? So what had happened was when he found out that was a deal that went down, he felt like that he knew right then and there which way this had to be played, because he felt like, you know, the Nearing territory that's adjacent to his country was being practically set up or getting ready to be set up with a movement that's going to threaten his very land. And he saw that. He saw that on a right away. Per se, you see what I'm saying, Jack?
Oh yeah.
He saw that. Oh,
no, he knows about the historic lands of Russia.
Yeah, but I'm talking about that movement of the money changers. The money change. You
oh
see?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you see, and he saw that the you know, the, what do you call it, proliferations or whatever, or, you know, the letting go of that type of, you know, protection getting close to his borders. And he saw that as a threat because he let the guy of that time, sitting president, you know, rendered that war, that nuclear capabilities. And with that movement, it made his country vulnerable.
Yeah.
See what
well,
I'm saying?
Yeah. Where Putin made his mistake, and he would probably know. Because none of this would be happening if the great and mighty king of Mother Russia didn't make this mistake. But when the coup was going down in the Ukraine, the color revolution, the Maidan, as they call it, when the duly elected president was still in power, instead of letting the guy haul ass, you know, grab his riches, he was corrupt. You ought to have seen all the opulence of wealth when he fled the Ukrainian palace. He had sports cars. He had like tiger rugs. He had like, you know, ivory, you know, interlocking artwork, horns, and just wealth all over the place. Anyway,
yeah.
Before the guy took off and ran to Russia, Putin should have told him, look, don't do that. Okay, your security services are fighting, people shooting one another. Just call us in as peacekeepers. I'll bring my whole army in. They will back up your army and the loyalists within your army and police force, and we'll hold the Ukraine. We won't let it fall in a coup. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen. And I blame Putin for that. He should have saw that, picked the phone up, told the president of Ukraine, we will hold you. We will not let this coup happen. We will soon be sending plane loads of Russian special forces to back up all your police and your security services and your military. Don't break and run. We'll come. And how many, think about it. Putin, for 10,000 guys, he could have sent there. He could have held the whole country and made sure that the president, you know, stayed in power and could have avoided. He could have avoided the last 8 years, all of this havoc, all of this shit.
We could think of two different things, scenarios too, though, Jacker. We could think one, he was trying to communicate with other country leaders, right, of exporting his natural resources. Two, they could have been making moves, you know, we don't know the scenarios, the synopsis of, these, you know, possibly EU people, right? Because we see how they play their cards, right? And we don't know haggling or whatever, the moves that they try to make. Try to have him occupied while this is taking place, of this individual taking off and not, Putin probably was just busy, you know?
Well, no,
it, it
no,
could
no.
Have been those two types of scenarios, you see?
One or two things happened, the reason why Putin didn't prevent that coup. One is, and this is probably the answer, the guy was weak. He knew he was corrupt. You know, he knew he was stealing money. And, you know, Putin says, probably made a phone call to him, says, look, just invite us in to help stabilize you. That's all you got to do. I'll take it from there. And all the guy could think about was, you know, these people are going to grab a hold of me and they're going to do Ceausescu. Well, I'm going to get a bullet, you know, in Town Square. I'm not going to make it.
And he said, freaked out.
He ran like a scared dog. He knew he was guilty. No matter what Putin said to him, he wasn't going to hold. And so I think that's probably what happened. Or Putin probably thought, there's still so many Russians in there. Doesn't really matter if this guy gets ousted. Whoever the next guy is, I'll be able to do a deal with. I mean, they're on our border. You know, I can play politics and, you know,
use instead of tuck tailing and run, he could have also did all of his dealing with Putin in a public, you know, a public setting to where everyone could be seen, you know, that they were meeting. You see what I'm saying? Like saying what you're saying, which makes great sense. I mean, that's great sense, dude.
All the former Ukrainian president had to do was go on TV and said, my fellow Ukrainians, you know, this is an illegal coup that's happening that's been put up by Western intelligence services.
Right.
This is all a setup. And in order to stabilize my Ukraine, I have called our neighbors and fellow brothers, Slavic brothers, the Russians, and I've asked Vladimir Putin to send in some peacekeepers, and I've invited in 20,000 guys.
Mm-hmm.
So now that would have put the end to it, because all those operatives, all those CIA safe houses, all that whole infrastructure that they built up, once the Russian army would have got there and taken over checkpoints and security, and if there's been any kind of battle, the Russians would have been able to put it down fairly quick. Then maybe some street fighting, some street battles. But by and large, Putin would have gone in there and cleaned the whole thing, cleaned all of Kiev out just a couple of weeks, and could have avoided this last 8 years of all this killing and shelling, all this hatred, and now this war. But I think the guy was a weak guy. And I think he just ran. I don't think no matter what Putin told him, was that guy going to stick around?
You think he would also maybe put a stop to all that damn Azov stallion shelling that they would have been
doing? Azov just got going in this last 8 years. That's what he called denazification. Yeah. He let all that stuff grow like a cancer. It grew and grew. And after 8 years, he realized, man, they got, do you realize, Two Feathers? I know Mr. Rowe's still on the line, but the biggest, the best trained, the largest army in all of Europe, if you take out Turkey, now don't count Turkey in as the 30 members of NATO, just count. Europe without Turkey. The biggest, most well-trained, highly qualified, largest army in Europe was the Ukrainian army. With 8 years average, the guys had combat experience for what was happening with Lugansk and Donetsk.
Well, where's all those guys at now?
Putin's killed most of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He denazified. He just killed a lot of them. They were all NATO trained, everything. 8 years, all that training, all that stuff.
They got rid of a bunch of Azov's battalion as well.
Right. Yeah, that's what Putin's running down now. But anyways, think about it. So the largest, best equipped, well-trained army in all of Europe the Ukrainians, and the Russians took them apart. What are we on? Day 120? So what's that? 1, 2, 3. That's 4 months. Took them apart in 4 months. Can you imagine what the Russians could do with the Finns? They're only about 5 million people total. They got like an army of 150,000 or something. That's like a weekend for the Russians. I mean, it would roll right through Finland. Sweden, same way. Poland, they may have 200,000. Also, the Ukrainians had 600,000 to 700,000 men in their army when the Russians went in with 200,000. 3-to-1 advantage. And the Russians still took them apart in less than 4 months. Where, I mean, their Ukrainians are running around now conscripting women, drafting them to try to hold the line. Yeah. Well, Two Feathers, Mr. Rowe, we're the last one standing. Looks like there's only a couple minutes left. You want to say anything before we go, Two Feathers?
Or yeah, let the people know on Mondays, right after the Noreen Helpan show, that would be her show ends at 1 o'clock Central, 2 o'clock Eastern. Come over and check Sergeant Miller and I on the Cognitive Reality Show. You'd be glad you did. You'd be glad to be there. We always bring something good to the table. So come check us out.
Ciao, ciao.
Yeah. Donate if you can. We're 11 years going to 12 years and running. Come check us out at www.revolution.radiofreedomslips.com. Because of you, the listener, we're able to keep this thing rolling. So keep coming back to Revolution Radio. You know you're welcome. Your family, we love it when you're here. Go ahead, Jack. Back to you.
Yeah, I guess that's it. I don't know how much more I'm going to be on the radio. And I did want to give people the heads up that 100 days and counting, and then it's all going to go down. And it looks like it's going to be big. They can't stop. They're going to keep on going. The death wave, the supply chain, everything, the inflation, the gas, just everything's getting ready to hiss. Okay, God bless everybody. Hijacker, over and out.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crip Rick, I think, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law, spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Alert, listen up now.
Tune into the Two Corner with Control Zero X.